It's Monday, November 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Welcome. Coming up, we go to Paris for the latest on the streets. U.S. lawmakers are talking about what the next steps are in the fight against Islamic State.
It cannot be contained. It must be defeated. It cannot be an American fight.
Terrorism becomes the main issue of debate among U.S. presidential hopefuls. Also ahead, a new movie depicts what might have happened had the United States lost World War II. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. French police have released a photo of the suspect who is still at large from the Friday night attack on Paris that killed at least 132 people after three additional people had died in the hospital. The suspect is identified as Salah Abdesalam, a 26-year-old man born in Brussels, Belgium. The posting soliciting information about the so-called eighth suspect warns he is dangerous and that anyone with information should call authorities. He is one of three brothers linked to the string of near simultaneous attacks across Paris late Friday. We also have reports now of a major French air campaign over Syria hitting multiple targets in the Islamic State stronghold of Raqqa. Amid this, there was a brief scare in Paris itself during a vigil. VOA correspondent Daniel Scharf was there, and he joins us with what he witnessed.
Yeah, this was the second night of people holding a bit of a candlelight vigil around the Place de la République. And there were hundreds of people there, and around the main central statue, there were a number of people lighting candles and taking photos, of course, but also showing their respects for those who had been killed in these horrific attacks. Another group that was a little bit further away was a little bit more defiant. They were singing some various songs. We were kind of right in between the two main crowds of people when there was sort of a gasp in the middle of the crowd, and it just sent this immediate panic, a wave of people coming right at us, and they just knocked into us before we had a chance to really react, and the cameraman grabbed the camera and the tripod, and we moved because we had to, because we were being, you know, hit by this crowd of people, this wave of people, and we went down the street along with the crowd, and people were just ducking and hiding and trying to get inside to any door that was open or could be opened. So there was a very quick reaction by people to try and help other people seek shelter. But after maybe 10 minutes or so, I went back outside. And the square at that point was already returning to a sense of normality. There was an increased security presence that was visible, but the security people, the police, you know, although they're very heavily armed, they were very calm. They were walking about just checking to make sure everything was fine.
Following the Charlie Hebdo attack earlier this year, there was a sense of closure. The atmosphere in Paris was much more relieved. There seems to be still quite a bit of heightened anxiety.
The city is still on edge, obviously, to a large degree. I mean, we've been told, or we've heard reports that this panic was apparently caused by somebody lighting off some firecrackers. I have to say, I did not hear any firecrackers, but keep in mind the authorities have said they don't want people to gather in groups. They've warned that, you know, people should stay at home and so forth, at least until Thursday. Just the fact that so many people want to gather together and to mourn and to also show that they're not going to be afraid, that they're not going to be put into a sense that they can't live normal lives because of these terrorist attacks.
The Paris Metro, the subway system, is one of the most extensive in the world. Have you had a chance to ride that and see how security is there?
I have not been on the Metro yet. I have seen some security around some of the Metro entrances in the neighborhood where I'm staying, but that's because we're, you know, relatively close to where all these attacks took place, within walking distance, just a few minutes walking distance of some of the main areas. So there's a larger security presence.
Being in that area where the attacks occurred, I presume those locations are still cordoned off?
Yeah, the concert hall where, you know, most of the deaths occurred, where This American metal band was playing. I believe there were around 80 people who were killed there. This is still very much an area that's cordoned off. You know, we talked to a lot of tourists who are here, and today they said, this is not going to deter them from coming to France or to Paris, that this is, you know, the best way they can show solidarity with France and show support is to keep coming here.
Daniel Scharf is normally our correspondent in Moscow, currently in Paris, and thank you so much for sharing your observations of what's going on at this time.
My pleasure.
It's time now for our social media segment with G. Abby Lee, and she joins me right here in Studio 22 to tell us what the U.S. presidential contenders are saying about the attacks in Paris. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. It's been a couple of days, but the manhunt is still ongoing in Paris. And since the attack, many U.S. presidential hopefuls have expressed condolences. Let's begin with the leading Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton. She tweeted this Saturday, "Even after this darkest night, Paris remains the city of light." That's been retweeted almost 7,000 times, and more than 11,000 people liked it. She also sent out this tweet, "Our prayers are with the people of France tonight, but that's not enough." That's a quote from the latest Democratic debate.
Well, what about the other main Democratic contender, Bernie Sanders?
He tweeted this Friday, "Horrified by the attacks in Paris tonight. My thoughts are with the victims and their loved ones." More than 11,000 people liked that tweet, and almost 9,000 people shared it. Another tweet by Sanders reads like this, "Leading the world, this country will rid our planet of the barbaric organization called ISIS." More than 1,000 people shared that tweet, and more than 2,600 people liked it.
The Republican Party contenders are not shy to make their voices known, and I'm sure Donald Trump had something interesting to say.
Of course, always. He tweeted this, "When will President Obama issue the words, radical Islamic terrorism? He can't say it, and unless he will, the problem will not be solved." That's been retweeted almost 5,000 times and liked by about 10,000 users. Ben Carson, who is following closely behind Trump in polls, sent out a more generic tweet Friday, "My thoughts and prayers are with the people in Paris tonight."
Well, what's the trending hashtag on the attack?
It's hashtag PrayForParis with the number 4 in the middle. In the last 24 hours, that hashtag was used in more than 21,000 tweets. Jim, back to you.
Well, we always appreciate your analysis. Our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee, and you can also follow her on our VOA International Edition account at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The attacks in Paris Friday have set off intense discussions among lawmakers here in Washington, as well as some finger-pointing. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins me in the studio with the latest.
Jim, Republicans were not happy to begin with the Obama administration's approach to Islamic State and to the conflict in Syria. Many Democrats were apprehensive about it. Now, the opposition and the apprehension have been magnified in the wake of the attacks in Paris when Congress reconvenes on Monday and I believe in the House on Tuesday. I expect that we're going to hear what you would expect, which is the expressions of support for France in their time of need. But beyond that, the beginnings of a reexamination of what exactly the United States is doing, what it needs to be doing. And in particular, now we have the Obama administration talking about the United States accepting a certain number of Syrian refugees, with news that at least one of the suspected attackers in Paris may have come from Syria as an asylum seeker. Just what the Obama administration plans to do in that regard, I expect, is going to be a topic of great scrutiny and debate on Capitol Hill this week.
Was this event potentially a game changer in the light that a Russian jet was brought down over Egypt? They haven't really called it an ISIS attack officially, but there is suspicion. And this attack in Paris, where there seems to be a direct link.
There is no doubt that a group that most people hadn't even heard of about 15 months ago has exploded onto the scene, and just in the last week or two has really, assuming that it was in fact Islamic State that was responsible for downing the Russian jet and now the attacks in Paris, really seems to be making its mark. And increasingly we are hearing that however much we feared al-Qaeda up until the last year, now the real bad boy on the terrorist block is Islamic State. What we're going to be hearing from Republicans is the charge that we've been hearing, which is that the Obama administration was late in diagnosing the threat that Islamic State posed and has been woefully inadequate in combating it. And there are some Democrats who would agree with that. There are also Democrats who say, well, wait a minute, whoa. It's possible that Islamic State would not have even come into existence had the United States not invaded Iraq and toppled Saddam Hussein back in 2003, and that the leading critics of the Obama administration's approach to the Islamic State are those who were cheering on the invasion of Iraq 12 years ago. This is something that I suspect this is a debate that we're going to hear on the presidential campaign trail a great deal about. But in terms of U.S. politics, I think that the assumption had been going into next year's presidential campaign that whether we ended up with a Republican president-elect or a Democratic president-elect might center on the economic performance of the nation. That is still obviously going to be a factor, but it is clear that this is also going to be a national security election.
This will certainly reignite the debate on intelligence gathering, how it's done, how intrusive it is, how much people are willing to give up for security versus how much the intelligence agencies say they need to know and gather.
Indeed. On the morning talk shows just a little while ago, there was that very debate. I think that those who are critics of the reach into our personal lives that the federal government is able to mount would point out that after a terrorist attack, the federal government would have that power anyway.
Well, some of the best intelligence that we tap into every week comes from Capitol Hill and VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
Michael. You are too kind, Jim, but thank you.
Terrorism became a major focus on the U.S. presidential campaign trail. The Democratic candidates talked national security and terrorism in a televised debate held in Des Moines, Iowa, and broadcast on CBS. VOA's Catherine Gibson has more from Washington.
They paused for a moment of silence for the terror victims in Paris. And then the debate opened, with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton distancing herself from President Obama's claim the Islamic State is contained.
We have to look at ISIS as the leading threat of an international terror network. It cannot be contained. It must be defeated. It cannot be an American fight.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders pointed to Clinton's 2003 war vote.
The disastrous invasion of Iraq, something that I strongly opposed, has unraveled the region completely and led to the rise of al-Qaeda and to ISIS.
Clinton and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley reaffirmed their commitment to bringing 65,000 refugees to the United States, carefully screened.
I do not want us to in any way inadvertently allow people who wish us harm to come into our country.
Earlier Saturday, following the Paris attacks, Republican presidential candidates attacked those plans.
The president wants to take in 250,000 from Syria.
The craziest thing we could do is to take people who live in a desert, who don't speak our language, who don't understand our culture, and bring them to Minnesota during the winter.
On the debate stage, Clinton came under fire for her ties to Wall Street.
We expect that our president will protect the Main Street economy from excesses on Wall Street.
Clinton defended her links to the financial industry by raising the 2001 World Trade Center attack.
I did spend a whole lot of time and effort helping them rebuild. That was good for New York, it was good for the economy, and it was a way to rebuke the terrorists who had attacked our country.
The Democrats debate again in mid-December in a race transformed by terror. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Check out the video on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
A new TV series from Amazon, The Man in the High Castle, takes viewers into a world where the Axis powers won World War II and have conquered the United States. International Edition's David Byrd reports the series, which debuts November 20th, is a dystopian view of life under Nazi and Japanese occupation.
The Man in the High Castle is based on Philip K. Dick's 1962 novel of the same name and takes place in 1962. The Allies have lost World War II, and the United States is divided between the Nazis in the East and the Japanese Empire in the West, with a neutral zone between them. Juliana Crane lives in San Francisco, outwardly happy with Japanese rule. But when her half-sister Trudy is killed by the Kempeitai, Japan's equivalent of the SS, Juliana learns that what she thinks she knows might not be true. Before she dies, Trudy hands Juliana a film which contains newsreels of a different outcome, with the Allies winning World War II. Juliana thinks that perhaps the film shows the real world rather than the one in which she lives. Trudy was part of an American resistance and was carrying the film to the neutral zone to meet someone. Juliana decides to take Trudy's place. Rupert Evans stars as Frank Frink, Juliana's boyfriend and a Jew in Nazi-occupied New York.
Frank, I saw Trudy.
What?
I was in the market and I saw her.
You saw the pawns shoot her?
I know it sounds crazy, but I saw her.
Angels, we have to get out of here. The Kempeitai came to the factory today looking for the shooter.
Do you think they were looking for you?
Yeah, told me they didn't ask for anyone by name. I got out before they saw me. Look, the Kempeitai won't let this go until they've got someone. Okay. And now, with Arnold, Jules, I have to get out of here. And when they come looking for me, you can't be here either.
French-born American actress Alexa DeValos plays Juliana. She says that while some Americans might balk at the show's premise, it does touch on universal themes.
This takes you away from everything you know. And yet, you know, there's an emotional connection to it. Pain is something that's obviously very timeless, and loss and fear and oppression and fascism and all these things are elements that we have today, unfortunately, and we had when the book was written and prior. So it's relatable, even though it's so incredibly different.
While in Colorado, Juliana meets and falls in love with Joe Blake, a 27-year-old New Yorker who volunteers to help the resistance. But he's really a Nazi double agent looking to infiltrate and betray resistance fighters. Luke Kleintank plays Joe Blake. He says that viewers might have difficulty accepting the show's premise, but will also find it intriguing.
You know, it's chilling. I think they're going to have a hard time accepting it, but at the same time, I think they're going to be intrigued by it. I mean, it's a piece of history that could have happened.
Frank Spotnitz is the show's producer, writer, and creator. He says that making the series reminded him of the huge debt the modern world owes to the World War II generation.
And what I've thought a lot about since embarking on this series is the sacrifices that this generation should be making to ensure that we live in a just world and that we live up to the ideals that, you know, our civilization stands for.
The Man in the High Castle also stars Rufus Sewell as John Smith, a ruthless Nazi SS officer. The Man in the High Castle is available to Amazon Prime subscribers beginning November 20th. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
We invite you to stay on top of the latest news coming out of Paris and around the world on our website at voanews.com. You've been listening to International Edition. We, of course, are at that very same website, and you can follow us on Twitter as well, our handle at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, and I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us, and we invite you back again. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
What drives people, especially young men and women, to join brutal and exploitative terrorist groups like ISIL or Boko Haram? We must better understand these drivers if we are to counteract the ability of terrorists to recruit new members and prevent the formation of similar groups in the future. Individuals, even entire communities, may align with violent extremist groups for many complex reasons. Those who feel marginalized by society on the basis of politics, religious convictions, social or economic status, or other grievances may find terrorist propaganda persuasive and look to find meaning and acceptance within terrorist groups, which often provide a storyline that allows them to turn to violence and inflict it on the society that had not fully accepted them. On a higher level, individuals and communities may seek meaning in radical ideologies and those who espouse them that seem to meet their needs for a purpose or identity. This means that in order to blunt the appeal of violent terrorist groups, we must find ways to fill unmet human needs. These can range from providing security to expanding economic options to giving marginalized communities a greater stake in determining their political future, said Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Sarah Sewell. So we are increasing our work toward an approach to countering violent extremism that better prevents individuals and communities from wanting to align with terrorism in the first place. This includes building trust. It includes empowering a broader range of people, including civil society, businesses, religious leaders, women, youth, international bodies, and former violent extremists to counter the false promises of groups such as ISIL and build more resilient communities. And it involves building a network of global partners, including regional and multilateral institutions such as the Arab League, United Nations, World Bank, African Union, and World Economic Forum, to reinforce the civilian-led components of this approach. In short, if we can remove or lessen the most insistent factors that motivate people to turn toward violence, then we can start replacing destructive ideas that uphold terrorism as a means of change with an avenue toward individual and community improvement and hope for a better future. As President Barack Obama said, "Ideologies are not defeated with guns. They're defeated by better ideas, a more attractive and compelling vision."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.